Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies brought to you with the support of the University of Sussex Business School. This is part two of episode 49, where we continue to discuss the revised edition of Gideon Kunda's book, Engineering Culture, Control and Commitment in a High-Tech Corporation. To get the text and for more information, please visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. And in this part of the episode, we're going to talk about connections we see between the text and current phenomena, where it might be in industry or literature, and other interesting themes we see.
So one of the themes that I found very compelling and very relevant today is that Kunda gives a very detailed analysis of the role of burnout in this company. Everyone there is very dedicated, they're working hard, they're working long hours, and that's all voluntary. Technically, they have flexible hours. They could work as many hours as they want. And yet with that freedom, what they're choosing to do with that autonomy is to overwork. And the role of burnout is treated with quite a bit of nuance throughout the story. It is both a way to show that you're a loser because you haven't been able to hack it in the company and you haven't been able to keep up, but it's also a way to signal that you're a hero because you're a casualty of this sort of very competitive environment and this kind of war for competitive advantage in the tech industry. So burnout is constantly introduced as a theme, but it's treated both as something that can signal your failure, but also your success, and is sometimes used as a bit of a badge of honor and status. So I like the way that he dealt with both sides of that, and also think that this is only becoming more relevant today within startup cultures, but also within a lot of corporate and knowledge work industries where people are becoming more and more competitive for security in their jobs.
Yeah, and I'd also like to add that this was endemic of sort of the archetype of tech success in the early days as technology firms started to open up. And this is my own experience. It may not be broadly generalizable, but what was happening was like everybody was trying to emulate Steve Wozniak in the garage, you know, that sort of a thing where you would just have a couple of people who have total mastery over the technology and can produce things on the cheap, devoting your entire life to it, basically, you know, 20-hour days or whatever. And this was in the late 70s and the early 80s. I think that the stories that were coming out of that is a way to achieve success. That was what was running through my mind as I'm reading through the stories about why are these people overworking like mad? Why couldn't they just manage an engineering project a little bit better, get more, you know, figure out how to apply the right resources, organize things a little bit better? And the answer that I keep going back to is that's because these folks have in the back of their mind that the individual total mastery of the environment, tinkering away until something great emerges, is the mindset. And so I thought I'd throw that out there because I kind of see how, you know, overworking could just simply be, even, you know, as risky as it is, how it could just easily in this environment become the norm.
I think there is something interesting about this mindset, as you're saying, which is, in a way, it's a very romantic idea almost that, you know, innovation is going to come by someone at the garage. And sometimes it does happen, but we know this innovation is almost, you know, a product of group efforts, that there is always structures that play a role in enabling that or not. And so I think what's interesting, this story of the burnout, it's always told with this individualistic undertone, that is the individual fault that the person didn't manage his or her own career or didn't push for the changes that were the person thought were necessary in the company. It's always back to the individual. It's never, oh, there was no structure in the company to enable or facilitate something, you know, or likewise, as you were saying, Tom, there is no consideration of how are we organizing things that really are making something possible or not.
Yeah, and you can kind of see that it was a neat and clean way for the organization to wash its hands. Again, that was my interpretation of the reading. It was like, okay, this is not our fault because we gave the values, we said what success looks like. You know, they didn't embrace it. Then there it is. You know, that's how it is.
Well, there's this undercurrent of we expect you to do whatever is necessary. There's that one of the hallmarks of the culture is do what's right. And I think that's one of the dark sides that Kunda doesn't explore very deeply, which is this the possibility that the corporation expects them to put in 18-hour days or 20-hour days or some number like that, or that's a strong signal that is sent. Maybe it's too strong to say it expects it to be done, but it's a very strong signal that gets sent to do what's right or do whatever it takes. And they do talk about in the book, many of the engineers talk about the need to set boundaries, right, and create good boundaries between work and home and other kinds of social activities, which are, I think this is unexplored territory. I think that's what was particularly new about this work and this looking at the normative culture is that's really important in organizations where you have this limitless supply of work to do and technical challenges. And yet at the same time, people have souls and they have families and they have relationships and social situations that they have to manage. And they give some great examples about, in the burnout descriptions about how people didn't do that very well. And I forget who said it, but somebody said it's almost like you could wash your hands of that. So, well, okay, well, this is the culture they did it themselves. And I wonder if that's something where there needs to be a little bit more explicit focus on that, not by Kunda, but by organizations to deal with that. Because that's why I think it was a great point that Ella brought up.
So this issue of boundaries is so important and only becoming more important. I kept thinking these guys, and they were mainly guys that were featured, don't even have smartphones at home. This was the 80s. They were going home to limited connection back to the workplace. There was some discussion of them having terminals at home, some of them, and there was a little bit of a speculation as to whether they were being or that whether their logins were being monitored by the company. But they didn't have the kind of connectivity that we have to our organizations now, and they were still struggling with this overwork, over commitment, and constant sense of connection to their company. So that makes me think that maybe the emphasis that we now give to technology as a source of burnout perhaps is misplaced, that these issues of managing boundaries have been around for a very long time. It was eye-opening to me.
I agree with your point, Ella. And one thing to bring into our discussion I think might play a role here is how people deal with emotions in this company. I really like the detailed description Kunda gives about this, that people are very suspicious about the authenticity of emotions expressed and actually think most emotions are inauthentic but strategically deployed to get things done in this organization. And I wonder burnout is an extreme of an unhealthy work dynamic. And I wonder if like the way people in this company actively try to manage the culture and manage the mindset and manage the emotions and the feelings of people, like it led to a very strategic use of those emotions to get things done. And whether that culture, like not being able to understand reality as it is, if that is ever possible, but always think about like strategically constructed situations might have something to do with the extremes we observed in this case.
I think it would have been interesting. I mean, obviously, with this particular type of a book, this would have been beyond scope. But I would have been interested to know what the stats were for things like the divorce and some of the other, you get the sense, of course, he's highlighting those things that were prevalent and were discussed. But the reason why I ask that is, I'm just kind of wondering to what extent did people feel that they absolutely had to subject themselves so much that they allowed themselves to basically go down a dark side in their personal lives? Or is it a matter that people who were entering the field at that time saw personal lives as being utterly disposable in the first place, and so this was just kind of natural? You see what I mean?
So I think I would try to take a tangential road here that, let me try something. I think what is important is not to forget what kind of people are these. And I think Kunda does a very good job at showcasing that there are different workers in the company. And, you know, the book is mostly about the engineering workforce, which is made up of mostly men, well-educated, middle, upper class, that has access to this company that is now probably providing them with a very good salary, or at least on, you know, that decent for a middle class standard, and have all the perks of having long-term employment and so on and so forth. So just to try to calibrate our, you know, of course we are looking at the conflict, the emotions, and all the negative things that come up with it, and how people end up spending all their energies at work and sometimes even forget to have a personal life. But this is people that somehow can have a choice to do that. You know, it's a kind of specific demographic that is doing that. So I think that's important, just so you know, as a baseline for our discussion, if that makes sense.
I agree, Pedro. And actually, there's been some discussion in the public press and on social media recently about companies and specifically startups and small to medium enterprises that are recruiting based on this message of overwork, that it actually seems to attract a certain demographic to work for these companies. And they've been criticized for it by people who say this is not fair or ethical or right to advertise that your employees are going to be overworked. And yet, people with all their freedom and autonomy and agency seem to be attracted to this very kind of hardcore culture of sprints and being in it together, and we're in the trenches, and there's almost like a yearning for this hardship, which I don't quite understand, but it's...
I agree with that. And to add to that, there are also detailed descriptions and quotes of people that left the company out of their free will, or let's say they didn't want to work there anymore because there's no firing policy, but then they came back. And if I recall one quote correctly, they were talking about experience working for one of the competing companies, and they say, like, well, at that company, engineers are tasked to do what marketing and sales wants us to do, and we cannot focus on the real engineering. And at this company, we can focus on the real engineering. So there are reasons why these engineers came back to this company despite the culture. And that also makes you think, like, to what extent is this case very, very unique on its own? Or to what extent are the things that are described in this case like a snapshot of the industry at that time? And maybe I think when you think about knowledge work nowadays, I think a lot of the elements described by Kunda is what we recognize all around us.
Well, there was an emphasis on the two sides of loyalty, right? One is, well, we won't lay you off or make you redundant, as in other countries, but there was some descriptions in the book about how difficult it was for some people to come back, because there was this, they also have maybe it's an unwritten policy that says we won't bring people back who've left the organization. This idea that loyalty is a two-way street, or, you know, you will be punished. That was very clear in the statements people were making, that they knew that some people wouldn't, you know, weren't let back, or that was there was a conflict there.
Yeah, and that policy was implemented at some point in time. Before, it was not there. It's also written somewhere in the book.
Right, and I think, Greta, you have a really good point about, are we seeing things that were unique to the time or that we now consider more commonplace? And Ella also read that part of it about how it's even harder to maintain boundaries now, because if we have all these extra ways to reach out and touch you. You know, your company doesn't have to have a terminal at home, and you have these smartphones. And there are many organizations today where you're expected to be instantly responsive. If you get an email at 11 o'clock at night, then you'll be responsive. And tech refers to that in the case of phone calls from Japan or India or something like that. And so not only is boundary, you know, formulation a challenge, but you think about this incentive or encouragement or unwritten support for working like crazy. You know, you see that in organizations like Uber or Lyft, where you get all these incentives for providing so many rides versus a certain period of time,
and workers are encouraged to do lots of, you know, lots of pickups and, you know, not only make the money, but then on the flip side, since in those organizations, compensation is derived by computer algorithms, you know, people will put all this time in and others will do it too and respond to the incentives. And then their wages go down, which we're noticing in studies that people are doing that it's driving people crazy.
There's that transactional aspect of it, which if you work harder, you get more money. And that's broadly how the gig economy is supposed to operate. But here, it's also the sense of somebody needs me, you know, somebody needs me at 11 p.m. And if I don't respond immediately, then the whole project's going to fall apart. And that gives you an enormous sense of status and purpose and identity. And like, you need to be available, you're on call. And especially for younger, ambitious, educated people who have kind of been training their whole lives for the workplace, that is the kind of environment that, you know, it's just exciting. And so I think that's the emotional or more psychological element of control that Kunda's identifying. And yeah, it's hard to know where the limits of it are.
I would say not even so psychological and emotional, but also even sociological, because when I read this, we can call it for what it is. There is such a macho kind of ethos in all of this of being available all the time, you know, wearing the burnout of a purple heart, as Kunda says in the book, and all this kind of stuff. So what I find interesting is that when I was reading the book and from what we know about the Silicon Valley today, there seems to be such a strong overlap. I could help but wonder how much what Kunda was describing of, you know, these people living for the technology, nothing happens, very sensitive to a number of things. He even talks about, you know, sometimes there is some discussion of how the technology is supposed to help society, but it's very much technology for technology's sake. And a number of other situations, I mean, you can read between the lines that in some situations in which there are events that involve women that are in leadership position, you know, there seems to be more pushback. At least I remember some meetings being described like that in the book. So there is all this kind of very, you know, stereotypical techie kind of thing that has only grown. And again, just think of the Silicon Valley and the things we have been witnessing. You know, it's almost like I have the feeling that Kunda was documenting the origins of a certain kind of, you know, company that works in a certain way and privilege certain kind of people and give voice to certain kind of concerns or not.
That's a very interesting point, Pedro.
I hope everybody's enjoyed the conversation so far, and we hate to leave you hanging, but now we're going to close out this session and stay tuned and watch the website for part 3 when it comes up.